Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to Star Wars Splash Page Comics in Review.
This is episode number 333. Jeff, how the Star Wars are you?
Geek me all knowing box sets stay open May 4th. I'm hoping Luke gonna be hot as before. Cause Ren looks hardcore and I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
Well, I just feel like I'm feeling everything everywhere all at once.
As am I. I actually stayed up with my wife to watch the Oscars.
So did I.
We did not plan to do so, but we realized that they had been on for about 45 minutes, so we looked up who won Best Supporting Actor and Best Supporting Actress, and we were like, yay! And so we turned it on, and we got suckered in, and we enjoyed it.
And if you're listening and you have not seen Everything Everywhere All at Once yet, the hype is absolutely earned, so give it a watch as soon as you can.
Yeah, it's absolutely bonkers.
It's one of those Best Picture winners that is going to age well, I think.
Yes, I have to agree with you. I do have to agree with you. So, but for me, just the highlight was seeing Ke Huy Quan win, and then I saw him when they won Best Picture, and it was so cool the way he just ran up the stage and hugged Harrison Ford. We should all be so joyous. So, and then of course we were very happy to see Brendan Fraser win, and which was funny because we had family movie night since we have sprung forward, and we ended up showing the kids Bedazzled, the 2000 remake of the Raquel Welch film.
He is hilarious in that.
He is. He truly is. So it was very pleasant to see him win for The Whale.
It was. I saw something today online. Somebody said, I think it's hilarious that everybody loves Brendan Fraser and hates The Whale, the movie itself. I've not seen it. I have no desire to see it because it seems like one of those just sort of wallows in its despair.
Yeah.
Because that's what Darren Aronofsky does. But everybody I know who has seen it has said, yeah, it's a one and done. I don't feel any need to watch it again. But they all said without fail, every single person said, but he is phenomenal in it.
Exactly. Yeah, I have this intonation toward The Whale as I do to Leaving Las Vegas. Yeah, I've only seen it once, and Leaving Las Vegas was an amazing movie, and Nicolas Cage totally deserved that Oscar, and Elizabeth Shue should have gotten the Best Actress Award that year. But, I mean, upon exiting the theater, I mean, even now, so many years later, I all I could think of at the time was, I just want to go home and die.
Right.
I mean,
and as far as Elizabeth Shue, that was a tough year because she lost to Susan Sarandon in Dead Man Walking, which is just as deserving of an award, in my opinion.
Yes. But I still think Shue should have won. So, but that's my opinion. So, and that's why you tune into this Star Wars comics podcast is to hear us expound upon film,
talk about movies. Yeah.
Mercy. Well,
so we have two books this week. We have Yoda number 5.
Uh-huh. We're at the halfway point.
Our Republic Adventures issue number 3.
Mm-hmm. We're almost at the halfway point.
Yeah, so that's it. Marvel couldn't have shifted one or two of those books from a couple of weeks ago to this week.
And at least Dark Horse has got a steady publishing schedule for the High Republic Adventures. So
Right. Before we dive into that, Matt, what have we got news-wise for comics this week?
Well, speaking of the High Republic adventures, we have previously said before that Dark Horse will be publishing Star Wars, The High Republic Adventures, The Complete Phase 1, which will collect the entirety of the IDW-published series, including the last five issues, which were not published by IDW as a trade because, you know, the license went to Dark Horse. So, you know, we do now, you know, have a firmer idea of what that book will include. It will include, it will include the entire run, which I believe was 15 issues, as well as, you know, that, and that does include the six issues that were not collected beforehand. We also get the one shot, the Galactic Bake Off Spectacular, as well as a new epilogue, story. So that in and of itself right there will make it worthwhile. And then, however, Dark Horse is going to be publishing the High Republic Adventures, The Monster of Temple Peak, and other stories. So that is the one that featured Ty Yorick, and of course was written by Kevin Scott and illustrated by Rachel Stott, and was supposed to be a graphic novel, was solicited as a graphic novel, and ended up being published by IDW as a four-issue miniseries. And it was a lushly illustrated book. It was very well written, but it did not work as a monthly book. It needed to be read in one sitting. Well, unless you did like I did and ordered the Panini published version, now you can get that experience. And I can tell you from experience that it reads so much better as a graphic novel. So, you know, that's the great thing. So this, The Monster of Temple Peak, is going to be released, looks like October 10th. In bookstores, and then, you know, technically October 11th in comic book shops, although if it comes out on a Tuesday at a big box store, your comic shop will undoubtedly sell it. So definitely keep an eye out for that, because it is, as I said, very worthwhile. And additionally, in addition to the four issues of The Monster of... Yeah, and it's got some other stories as well. So I think it's also going to be collecting the High Republic Adventures Annual that has not been collected before. And again, of course, you know, unless you have gotten the Panini published books from abroad, which are sadly now going out of print. Still no word if Dark Horse will collect, ultimately collect and publish both runs of Star Wars Adventures. In a similar format. I'm hoping they do. And both of these are trade paperbacks. They're not hardcovers. So, you know, that helps keep the price somewhat reasonable, if you will. We got a sneak peek at a couple of pages of April 12th's Return of the Jedi Ewoks one-shot that has been written by Alyssa Wong. One of those pages was by Lee Garbett and Yava Tartaglia. And then what's important about that page? Well, it features a certain Ewok from Last Shot, the Daniel Jose Older novel. Alyssa confirmed that is the same, one of the same Ewok. And then we had a great preview page from one of our favorite artists, Casper Wingard, as well. So, you know, again, that one shot is due April 12th, and, you know, we're going to get our murder bears in full effect. So, Totally down with that. You know, have no complaints. And then, of course, in a bit of a surprise move last week on a Friday, StarWars.com dropped a look at the complete solicits for Marvel Comics for June. So that was really intriguing. And if you are a Dr. Aphra fan, you are going to be, well, eating well, because she's going to be in Darth Vader 35. As a matter of fact, she's on the cover. We also got a look at Darth Vader Black, White, and Red number 3. And you know who's got a story in it that he's writing and drawing? Daniel Warren Johnson.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. And if you're a longtime listener of the show, you will know that we've had Daniel on a couple of times. And that we still rave about his independently produced comics that he doesn't sell. But you know, you can acquire through other ways. According, you know, there was one about the A-Wing pilot that crashed into the Star Destroyer bridge of the Executor in Return of the Jedi. So in addition, it looks like we're also going to see Luke finally get his green lightsaber. So that's going to be quite intriguing. And then we are getting, as part of the ongoing celebration of the 40th anniversary of the Return of the Jedi, the next one shot will be Empire. And it is being written by Jody Houser, yay, who coincidentally is writing this week's issue of Yoda, and features art by Jethro Morales. And the solicit was pretty cool because it's, what would you do if the Empire took over? You know, as operations begin to take shape on the moon of Endor, a technician must figure out how to live under the control of the Empire. But if he can't stay out of trouble, what will the Empire do with him? So should be kind of cool. I'm kind of looking forward to that one. And then, of course, we have confirmation of what we thought was going to be the case. It's Star Wars: The Mandalorian Season 2, Number 1, will take its bow in June. And then, of course, Yoda has its ongoing arc, with Master and Apprentice, so that's Yoda and Anakin, written by Mark Guggenheim. Are a fan of Mark, you might want to check out episode number 332 of the podcast. We had a special interview only episode with Mark that was somewhat informative and more than illuminating. And last but not least, when it comes to Bounty Hunter covers, Marco Tichetto, apparently starting in June, will be taking over doing the covers for Bounty Hunters. And of course, Bounty Hunters number 35 is a big one because Valance and Tonga are being joined by Kel Tana from Han Solo and Chewbacca, Deathstick, Dirge, and Boba Fett. That's going to be interesting.
Oh. So,
what alarms me is the lack of Alosha mentioned, though, in that solicit. So that has me a little worried because they are in the midst of about to face off with Inferno Squadron, and that kind of is a little concerned to me. So check the Facebook page, if you will. Thanks to the High Republic show last week, we got a sneak peek at the interiors of the Blade number 4 of 4. And we also got an early look at, looks like 3 pages of the High Republic volume 2, number 7. Both of those books, of course, are due out in April. I think they're due out, but no, they due out this month, due out later this month, I believe. So, but if you want a sneak peek, you can find those. And that is all we have for the news now, this Monday, March 13th. I'm sure something else will have dropped in the interim time between now and when this podcast is released.
Always, always, always. But again, that's what social media is for. So thank you again, Matt, for keeping all of that up and updated for us.
Anytime.
All right. So let's say we start with Star Wars Yoda number 5. The Marvel offering for the week.
Well, this is number 5 of 10, and our writer for this current 3-issue arc is Jody Houser. Art is by Luke Ross, big Luke Ross fan. Color artistry is by Nolan Woodard. Letters are by Virtual Calligraphy's Joe Caramagna. The main cover is by Phil Noto. And then we have some variants. Of course, we have a David Lopez variant, and then there's a David Messina and Alex Sinclair variant, and then there's a Peach Momoko Women's History Month variant. Carlos Lau is the designer of this book. Mikey J. Basso is the assistant editor. Danny Kazem is the associate editor. Mark Benizia is the editor. C.B. Cebulski is our editor-in-chief. And for Lucasfilm, we have senior editor Robert Simpson, creative director Michael Siglane, art director Troy Alders. From the story group, we've got Matt Martin, Pablo Hidalgo, and Emily Shkokani. And we have our creative art manager is Phil Shostak. This issue is a perfect bridge issue.
It's the definition of a bridge issue because not much happens, and we don't even have a whole lot of Yoda this week.
No, we don't, because this issue builds on what we saw in issue number 4, which was the arrival of Dooku to Coruscant, to confer with Yoda. While there, Dooku is introduced to a Padawan, a Wookiee named Kirsish, who is starting to have visions of Geer. And Geer is a Trandoshan Jedi. And this issue focuses on her and how she was found on Alaris Prime by the Wookiees. Apparently, the Wookiees and the Trandoshans had a mighty battle, and many lay dead. And Yoda is puzzled, not necessarily so given the history of strife between the two species, but the Wookiees have found a very young Trandoshan, a youngling, and it is a gifted youngling, and she exhibits Force's ability. So Yoda is like, all right, well, strong in the Force and still young enough to be taught, and take her to the temple, I will. And that is what she does. He does. And we cut back, we jump ahead 12 years. And remember, this is set, I don't want to say it's set in the prequel trilogy, because it's before the Clone Wars. This is taking place before the events of the Phantom Menace. But we see Geer at the Jedi Temple dueling with Jack Sin, the Togorian, whom we know unfortunately comes to a rather unsavory end at the hands of Count Dooku during the prequel trilogy era. And they are dueling, but they are also, having to deal with the fact that Kirish is having visions about her, and is sort of not bullying, maybe, but just sort of, there's one panel where he walks by and he just sort of knocks her on her shoulder.
Yeah, he's being very passive aggressive.
Yeah, and Jackson's
not so passive.
and Jackson's like, dude, that's uncool. And finally, Yoda notices and calls Kirsish out, not publicly, but says, look, hang back, we need to talk. And as he's hanging back, Jackson and Geer are walking out with the other Padawans, and Jackson's like, I don't know why he became such a jerk, but it's about time he got in trouble for it. And Geer rightfully tells Jackson, don't wish bad things on people. That's not what a Jedi does. And she goes, I don't. And she delivers a very poignant line here. And this is a reason why it's always good to have Jody Houser writing a Star Wars comic. Besides, I don't want him to get in trouble. I just want it to be my friend again. Because, before Dooku's arrival, these three were as thick as thieves. They were the Jedi equivalent to the Three Musketeers, almost. So, and so what transpires is Yoda tries to get something out of Kirsish, and isn't really that successful. While he's trying to talk to Kirsish, we see Kirsish's vision, which is Wookiees and Trandoshans fighting each other, and Geer, and I'm wondering if is it Geer? I need to message Jody and ask her if it's Geer or Jair.
I was pronouncing it Geer.
So, but he sees Geer, with a red lightsaber, poised to strike him down. And of course, Yoda is concerned about, fear and anger, and delivers that, that line, allowing fear, anger, even hate to cloud your interactions with others. That is the path to the dark side. And of course, Kirsish is just like, well, it's Wookiee and some Trandoshans, and Yoda rightfully posits, whatever their conflict is in the larger galaxy, in this temple, it has no place. And then, he lets Kirsish know, Geer's history, and I got the impression that he was unaware of this. So he looks like he feels kind of bad, but they sort of. We see them, later in the cafeteria, and, Kirsish walks up, very penitent, if you will, stands before Geer, and then they hug. And then we realize it's just one of his visions, because then she pushes him back and lights her blade. Then he wakes from his sleep. So he comes back to talk to Yoda. Kirish wants to talk to Dooku again, which he does, and then Dooku doesn't help at all, because he's still recalling the actions of his dear friend Sifo Dyas, and the divisions that Sifo Dyas was having and is having, as far as we're aware. And as a matter of fact, he goes so far as to tell the Wookiee a warning so far in advance is a gift for a Jedi. So
do we think at this point Dooku is the one that's giving him these visions?
I'm still not entirely sure.
Because this is certainly not good advice that he gives him.
No, it's very.
It's Sithish advice.
Oh yeah, very much so. Very
Sithy
much so.
Advice, I should say.
So, but I'm not entirely sure yet. I it would not surprise me in the least if in next issue we find out that it was him. Obviously, we'll see.
So yeah, he sets him up on basically a collision course, and that's kind of how we leave it here, because full disclosure, I'm waiting on my page to load. Because from that point forward, they're on a ship of some sort, and one of the Padawans, or I guess at this point are they still considered Padawans, or are they? I guess they are still Padawans.
Yeah, they're still Padawans. They're not yet initiates.
Right.
Oh no, I guess they're initiates first and then Padawans. So.
Right. He says that they're dropping them off. Basically, it's like an outward bound adventure experience. They're just going to drop them off in the wilderness. And they fend for themselves. And Yoda, goes off by himself. And they're wondering where the kids, I'll call them kids, notice that he's gone. And one of them says, I've heard the greatest Jedi masters don't need a ship to travel through space, which is funny. And they say, well, he wouldn't just leave us here, would he? And he says, relax, I'm sure he's somewhere on the planet. But remember, the whole point of this exercise is to see how we do on our own. And again, the Wookiee is looking at his friends, and he's seeing the Trandoshan in his vision bear the sword again. And they ask him, Kirish, is everything okay? And he says he wants to talk alone. And this is where she says, is something wrong? You seem agitated. And he just smacks the Trandoshan around up against a tree and everything. And then he lights his saber, and that's where we end it. And so it's almost one of the situations where it's a self-fulfilling prophecy here.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's like he's willing it into motion.
It's like the guy that I knew one time when I worked at a video store who quit his job because he was convinced he was going to get fired by the manager, so he just quit. And of course, he wasn't about to get fired. He just quit because he was kind of a dummy. Much like this Wookiee here, in my opinion.
Exactly.
So yeah, very much like you said, a bridge issue, and I just, for a book called Yoda, it was surprisingly short on Yoda.
Yeah, but we've also we're also seeing Yoda the teacher.
True.
Which is never a bad thing. So.
True. So we'll see where this goes, but I have a feeling I'm going to be very, very frustrated by this whole thing. Which is not a bad thing. I think the story is supposed to be frustrating. It's just, I don't like to be frustrated.
Exactly.
All right, so that brings us to Dark Horse's offering, which is Star Wars High Republic Adventures, issue number 3.
Exactly. Of 8.
With a really fun cover here. The trap is sprung, and we see our youngling leaping into action among a bunch of bunch of vehicles or something. Well, I don't know. It's an interesting cover.
It is. Well, and this is a of course, myth by Harvey Tolabow and Kevin Tolabow. And Harvey and Kevin are part and parcel part of the High Republic Adventures mythology, you know, given all the covers right. they did for the, the first volume for IDW and they have such a great style. So, but this is written by Daniel Jose Older, illustrated by Tony Bruno. Color art is by Michael Attia. Letters are by Comicraft's Tyler Smith and Jimmy Betancourt. Publisher for Dark Horse is Mike Richardson. The editor on this book is Matt Dreyer. The assistant editor is Sanjay Darawat. The designer of the book is Stephen Reichert. The digital art technician is Samantha Hummer. And then we have the same team for Lucasfilm as well. And this book is just fun. It's it seems that Daniel has been given the keys to the playground when it comes to the High Republic Adventures, and these all ages books, and he's not letting that hold him back in terms of storytelling. He is giving us a rather multi-layered tale that focuses on Saav Maligan, as a Padawan herself, based on Takodana, at the Jedi Temple there, and she's run off with Maz Kanata and her pirates to fight other pirates and is finding herself involved in somewhat of a mystery here. And it's written in such a way that it's got great pacing. It really sucks you in. And it's got these just perfectly organic elements of humor that make the book stand out.
There's one panel that I laughed out loud when I was reading it.
I know the one because I'm going to wait for you to discuss it because I bet it's the same one that I laughed aloud at. And that's why these books have just been a gem. They are diamonds. They were standout during phase one, and they are to my mind, the standout book of phase two. So, and I think it's because, Saav is such an intriguing character, because we've seen her as an adult prior, and now we're seeing her, sort of learning the ropes.
Right.
To the point that we find out that, we open up this book, she and Maz's crew are on the Grim Devourer, which is the Dank Grax stolen pirate ship. And she is talking, to her master and just trying to come up with a cover story as to why she's on this ship, why she's left the planet, and she does the whole thing. I'm going through a tunnel. I can't hear you. So.
And that's what made me laugh, because she's talking at one point. You hear this. This and he says, a Padawan. So, Saav, are you just making static sound effects with your mouth so you don't have to answer? She keeps doing it, and he's like, okay, it's time you came back. Huh? And then it actually starts happening on the master's end.
Yeah,
and they get disconnected.
Her master Cocktorf is having nothing doing with this, totally not buying it at all. So.
Are you just making sounds so you don't have to answer? That's what made me laugh.
Yeah, it's just like, this is awesome. So, and then we pull back and we see that while she's talking to her master, that Maz is there with some of the crew watching. It's just mercy. So. Yeah.
Yeah, folks, if you couldn't tell, we thoroughly enjoyed this book. And so what happens, the storyline goes as it goes on, is I don't remember the pet that they left behind, Abadoo, spying on the group that took over their ship, and gets a message back to them I guess Abadoo's maybe not a pet, but gets a message back to them, and they figure out what's going on. And then we get this other, was this another part that made me laugh almost as hard as the first one, was when we see Dexter walk out and he says, good to finally get that stuffy body armor off. I can breathe again. And he's wearing like this, like some sort of ratty old t-shirt, and his belly is almost hanging out of it. And so they're discussing what's going to happen on this other ship. And Maz is giving Sava, some backstory about this evil cult. She calls them the Scarlet Skulls. And she says the evil cult of murder kids who tattooed their faces with Scarlet Skulls. They can chop out their own tongue so they can murder people. She says, yep, that's them, yeah. And so come to find out that the girl in the other crew is one of this clan, is from this group. And the character's name, I'm drawing a blank on the one who rescued her.
Oh,
Alak. Alak, whatever they call him.
Yeah, Alak, and and that's Quiet Shan.
Yeah, yes, Quiet Shan is the character we're talking about, sorry. And he took mercy on her, and he ran away after he had already gone through his ceremony, and he came back to get her right before it was time for her to have her own ceremony, and this is where she's ended up.
Yeah, and we got to stop here. We got to pause here because, you know, there's this one panel that Tony has drawn that Michael has colored, and it shows Alak staring off at the, you know, at the castle from whence he is, you know, from which he left.
Gorgeous.
I don't know if this is purposeful or not, but you know, it looks like something out of He-Man and the Lord of the Rings.
Right, you know, and I thought Dark Crystal as well.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, now that you say that, I can see that definitely. Because yeah, you know, we see this sort of skull foundation, and then we see the castle built on the crown of the skull, and it's all lit up in red. So, and it's just, you know, and it looks like a not very pleasant place to be a kid in. So, and then just, you know, but the way Sav is just hooked into this, you know, because Maz has sucked Sav into the story. You know, did he save her? Of course, she's right there. Quiet Shan was the baby. I knew it. Whoa. So we just have this wonderful, you know, enthusiasm of a teen, you know, hearing a great adventure tale. And the whole time, you know, just Quiet Shan is just sitting there, you know, with a lack in front of her. And she's just kind of staring, you know, looking around. Hey, how's it going? So, you know, and of course, you know, and that's what, you know, kind of where we get our moral here, because, you know, Maz says, point is, we trust Alak completely, but we also know how feelings can cloud things. So we all agreed, if he's going to be chatting with this pirate hunter every night, we'll keep an eye on him, make sure he doesn't accidentally give up any secrets. And Saab goes, wow, I kind of love it.
And Maz says, it's awkward, but it works, which is great. And so from there, we cut to Frander's hidden depot, and the pirates are there talking to Frander. And they say, what exactly do you mean by no? And he goes, it's very clear what is not clear. Negative, not happening, none such. So he's told them no. And he's the leader, what is this species? I'm drawing a blank. The bug guy.
Oh, you're going to ask me that. Because it's the guy from Rebels.
Yes. Geonosian. The Geonosian.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The Geonosian, the leader of the group, is saying, who the Graf clan, who you work with, okayed the deal. You work for the Grafs. And he says, well, I heard about what you did back in Utapau. No love for the Republic, certainly not for the Jedi, but I don't work with those who use the Force like this. He does have some morals, at least, or some scruples. So it was asked of me, they want to make it obsolete. All I need is you losers out here committing more atrocities with it banned for sure. And so he's created these things called eviscerators. Force users have enough power already. As they say, why give the give a ship only they can use? We give them a ship only they can use. So this is what they're after. And he's told them no, because he knows what they're going to do with it. And the Trans-Ocean says, look, I tried to pay for these like an honest businessman, but you forced my hand. And I'm guessing that means they're gonna off him. He's gonna be dead. And then we find out that Sav has piloted them into where they need to go.
Mm-hmm.
So which is interesting. And they get off the ship and they're back here. And he says, "I love that." I think it's Maz says, "Everyone stay salty fresh. Keep your weapons hot and your heads cool." I don't know who's saying that, but somebody's saying that to him. And so they see what's going on here, and they come upon this image, this transaction where they're having what looks to be a standoff. And the Geonosian says, but perhaps if we do away with some of your little pets, you'll see things more clearly. And this merchant goes, funny, I thought the same. And he, I guess, goes to pick up Quiet Shan, I'm guessing using the Force. And he says, release my bond breaks. Alak, you know, gives them the go ahead. Meanwhile, the Geonosian is saying, do whatever you must, and so will I, Frander. And so as they're doing this countdown, Sav comes out dressed up, and he says, just stop this instant, everyone. And they saw the crew's looking like, is that Sav? And they asked, who the Void are you? And what are you doing in my depot? And so Sav comes up with the name Bazrip Wrathed. The Graf Clan sent me to oversee this deal. I thought I normally provide bounty hunting services for them. So he's really playing himself up.
It's also a nice nod, you know, because, you know, they talk about the Graf family.
Right.
Which is, you know, direct nod, you know, to the events of phase one of the High Republic, because it was the Graf family and the Santeca clan who were competing with each other during the hyperspace rush. and the Grafs became, you know, one of the wealthiest families in the entire Galactic Republic. But once it was discovered that they had sort of kind of been collaborating with the Nile, that brought lots of trouble onto them. So,
right. And I love this exchange because the seller says, how come I've never seen you before, child? And so says, the higher the quality, the higher the price tag, as you well know, dear Frender. And in the meantime, somebody on the other end of their comm, of the pirates' comm, has found their ship, and it appears to be unguarded. And so the Geonosian says, all right, we'll have to confirm your existence. So we'll be back. Then Maz is walking around. She says, what kind of hideous, dark-sided nonsense is Arkik up to now? She says, they're teamed up with who? And so she's getting all this information, and then she runs straight into the, what is this species again? This is the same species as Darth Plagueis, correct?
Oh, Moon. M-U-U-N.
And so we come back. So she runs straight into him. So she's got something going on. So they come back, and Grander says, you're not who you say you are, child. And Sav says, He says, but you saved my bone bracks and defused a nasty situation, so you have my thanks. And Sav keeps talking instead of just letting well enough alone. He says, now, how about you tell me exactly what it is you're... And they get interrupted because at this point, the ship opens fire. I can't tell. This is the pirate ship.
Yes.
Not Maz's ship, right? Opens fire on them. And so they all have to take cover. And thankfully nobody gets hurt. Dexter finds Sav and she says, see, you found me? I didn't ask to get shot at. which is funny. And so they get back and they all reconvene, and then Dexter says, like, wait, have we heard from Maz? And Alex says, no, she must be
still on the ship
as it takes off.
So they run to the Scabbard, which was the ship that, you know, because, you know, Maz's ship got stolen by the pirates. So they run to the scabbard, take off to go after and find Maz, and then they're aboard and they realize, wait, where's Sav? Because Geo-Jexter's like, wait, where's the kid? And Alex, Sav, I thought she was with you. How do we keep losing people? Because we got too many people. And then, you know, so Jexter, you know, calms Sav. What are you doing? Where are you going? What are you doing? The one thing only I can do to save Maz. I'm going to join the Dank Grax. So she's going to join the pirates.
She's gone from one group to the next. And this just keeps getting bad to going from bad to worse.
But it's still funny the entire time.
Yes, agreed.
So, yeah. Huh. And despite what the cover for issue number 4 says, it will not be on sale February 22nd.
Oh dear. Hopefully they change that for the print version.
I we'll see. Fingers crossed. So.
Oh dear, but yeah, really, really good book. This book it's just a lot of fun.
It is. Yeah. It's a blast to read. It's just it's everyone is having a good time, and and that's the important thing. So.
Well, I always think Star Wars is just better when there's a lighter touch applied. Personally.
Well, it should be. Yeah, it's fake and it's in space and it's meant for kids.
Exactly. So a couple of decent reads this week. I liked High Republic Adventures much more than Yoda, but Yoda wasn't bad.
Well, Yoda, like I said, it's setting things up for the next issue. For when Kirsch finally has that confrontation with Gare.
Yes. So that's going to be it for this week. What have we got for next week, Matt?
We have two books. We have Darth Vader number 32, and we have the. Officially, we'll see, the High Republic Adventures number 4.
Okay.
I mean, we'll see.
We'll see. Fingers crossed. We'll see what happens.
We'll be back next week to discuss. I'm going to go to Dark Horse right now and double check. Actually, let's hold on. Let's do a live check. Get ready. Here we go. The High Republic Adventures. My noisy, clacky keyboard. Let's see here. Nameless Terror. The High Republic Adventures number 4 is due out March 22nd.
All right. So maybe we'll have it next week. If we do, we'll be talking about it. If we don't, we'll be talking about something else.
Exactly.
All right. So that will do it for this issue of Star Wars Splash Page. And I say issue instead of episode on purpose. So until next time, I'm Jeff.
I'm still Matt.
May the Force be with you.
Always.
The Star Wars Splash Page theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
Stop peeing!